I'm Barb, and I am an alcoholic. Okay, this group over here, I attend a couples group with my husband, Joe, on every month. And normally we meet on the third Saturday of every month. Well, I did not tell the group where I was going tonight, and somehow they found out. And so, yeah. Hi, everyone. Okay, my name is Barb, and I am an alcoholic. I'm going to put it out there first. I haven't attended Toastmaster meetings. I'm not a public speaker, and I'm not on the circuit. So what I did do, though, is I said, God, please speak through me tonight. So I think, you know, we've all, if you've spoken in AA before, people tell you what to do, and that's what I was told to do, is turn it over to God. When I sat down, my sponsor said, Barb, did you pray in the bathroom before? And I said, no, I fixed my hair, you know. No. Thank God for the second break, because I did go in and pray, you know, at that point. I did follow her direction at that point. I'm sorry, but I didn't think about praying before. The hair is fixed, though. So that always makes me feel better, you know. If my outsides are fixed, maybe my inside will be okay, too. I think some of you can probably relate to that. You know, I want to acknowledge the newcomers, Chuck, Lindsay, Sherry, Shelley, David, Arlette, Jeff, Carly, and Josh. I had to write down your names because I'm old and I would forget, but I thought of you, and I remember whenever I was a newcomer and that feeling inside, and I wasn't sure what you all were about, and I wasn't sure I wanted what you had, and I wasn't sure where my life was going, but I knew it wasn't on a good track. And you probably feel like you're not very important in these rooms, but in my mind, you're the most important people. Because all of us were newcomers at one point in our sobriety. And you don't get to any length of sobriety without being a newcomer. You know, so I welcome you. And I hope you'll give us a chance. Give us 90 days. See what we're all about. You can go back out. Your drinking's going to be so messed up, though. I don't recommend it. I'm telling you. Go now if you want to, because, you know, you probably could drink and be okay with all of it, but if you stick around us, it's no fun. A head full of AA and a belly full of booze is not a good combination. And I see some heads shaking, and I think you know what I'm talking about. So I recommend you just kind of take what you like, you know, and give us a chance. It's not a bad gig. You know, has been my experience. I do have to say I'm over the support that I have in the room. My husband is here, Joe, and I'm glad you're part of this with me tonight. My sponsor is here. And I have a lot of women friends that are here, too. My friend Molly is here, too. Hi, Molly. You know, and that warms my heart. And that's testimony that I haven't done this journey alone. It's not a program that I think I could have done by myself. If you're new, I suggest you get like 3,000 cell phone minutes, because that has served me well. You know, a lot of my friends are cell phone buddies, you know, because life is in full session. And, you know, I love to talk to people, and I don't want to do this journey by myself. My friend Lori is here as well. She's another friend. You know, I mean, I hope I haven't forgotten anyone. But, you know, those are people that know what I'm about. And what I'm about is staying sober today, a day at a time. And, you know, I came from a large family. I have five sisters and I have two brothers. Yeah, one of eight. And we grew up in a small town in Blythe. I don't know if anybody's been to Blythe. Yeah. That's right. Most people drive through Blythe. You know, they just keep on going. It's 110, 115 during the summer. There's not a lot going on. They have great Mexican food, though, for anyone who's interested. La Casita Dos. I love their beef tacos still today. But Blythe, it was hot. There wasn't a lot to do. My parents were teachers, and they had a lot of kids, and they needed jobs, and Blythe needed teachers. And actually, my mother got the job first, and she said, if you take me, you have to take my husband as well. So I said, okay, well, it's a package, you know. So that's how we ended up in Blythe. We didn't have a lot of money. I was taught if you wanted something, you go out and work for it. And so I started working at age 15, and I cleaned motel rooms at Easy 8 Motel. Now, I wasn't supposed to be working because you were supposed to be 16, but my mom said, if you want school clothes, you need to get a job. And I thought, okay, I want clothes, you know. So I started working at this hotel. And I mean, it was, my sister was there, but if I think back now on it, like 15 in, you know, in a hotel, I mean, it was truck drivers that went through this. I mean, I'm lucky to be here today. I mean, someone could have grabbed me. There was no cell phone. I rode my bike. You know, I came home when I was done. My mom, you know, she really didn't know when I would be coming home or not. You didn't call and say, I'm on my way home, or text my mother. You know, it just didn't happen. You know, but it was a small town, and it was relatively safe. And my sisters worked as well. And, you know, at that point, my sisters were all very, like, well, let's just say kiss asses. You know what I mean? They were, you know. And I was different from them. You know, I wasn't, you know. And they would all, like, do what my parents would say. And I would kind of just push the envelope a little. And I remember my husband shaking his head. I'm still pushing the envelope with my family. But, you know, they didn't drink and they didn't smoke in high school. They were, you know, they were flag twirlers, you know, they were studying. I mean, my one sister would sneak out the window, but, you know, that was like the worst thing they did, you know, and which was fine. And then I came along and, you know, my dad was a high school teacher and, you know, they all knew my parents, and I would get in their classrooms and they'd say, oh, we're so glad to have you, because they were glad to have my sisters. And then about 3 weeks into it, they'd say, you are nothing like your sisters, are you? And so I felt different. I felt different. You know, that kind of started me feeling like, gosh. And I would try to be like my sisters. I really would try not to talk and do things, but I just couldn't. I couldn't. And so one summer, I was walking with my sister home from the library, and this guy in this blue Datsun pickup truck drove by, and he was looking at us. And I thought, oh, okay, you know. Well, next thing I know, he asked us if we wanted a ride. And I said, sure. And so I got in the truck with him. You know, I wanted a ride. It was hot. You know, who wants to walk when you can ride? You know. So next thing I know, my sister was at home, and I was in the truck with him. And next thing you know, he has something I'd never seen before, and it was a joint, you know. And next thing you know, here comes the beer. You know, I thought, wow, he's got a lot of new things that I had never tried before, you know. Well, needless to say, I liked it, and I liked it a lot. And next thing you know, I'm drinking Boone's Farm wine. Yeah, it was, whew, it's still kind of, oh, I get the shudders, you know what I mean? It's just nasty. But it was sweet, you know, it had a little sweet taste to it, and it was hot, and I remember, I got totally drunk. And I remember my parents, they had like this air conditioner that was always running. There was water in the background, in the backyard, and I ended up flat on my face, passed out in a puddle of water in the middle of the summer, you know. And this guy didn't know what to do with me. I didn't know either, you know. But somehow I managed to get myself back into my bedroom, and I just kind of slept it off. But it wasn't, I thought, well, it was just a first time. Well, you know, I'm doing this on a regular basis with my boyfriend. And, you know, my dad now, I was in high school, my dad decided, he was a teacher, and he started teaching high school as well. That's not a good thing for a kid like me to have your dad on campus, you know, in a small school. You know, it was disastrous. But I was busy at lunchtime and things like that because my boyfriend and I would go to his house and smoke some dope. And he was Hispanic, and his mom would make us food. Oh, God. You know, and that was kind of fun to eat a lot. I'd get the munchies and, you know. And, you know, I had a lot to do during my lunch hour. I mean, you know, smoke some dope, you know, have sex, to be honest, and, you know, eat Mexican food. Well, you know, I mean, it happened more than once, believe me, you know what I mean? And that was just what I did, you know. But needless to say, it was hard to get back to that fifth period, you know. You know, my time management skills at that point were a little challenged, you know. And so I'll never forget it. I came back, and my dad is on campus, and I'm hiding behind a tree because I'm late, you know. And so he's, like, looking for me, and I'm hiding, you know. Oh, God, it was disastrous. Again, he didn't know what to do with me. And I just said, you know, things got, you know, delayed. It will never happen again, I told him, you know. And And then I remember when that report card came home. And at this, it was very, you know, good timing on my part, because they transitioned from the handwritten. I know some of you are young, you're like a handwritten report card, but yes, they used to handwrite them. And the school transitioned to the computer system. But, you know, those computers in those days, you could not trust them. Couldn't, you know. So I got my report card, and I had missed 56 periods of fifth period. You know, during the quarter or something. And my mom said, "What is this about?" And I said, "It's the computer. It is that computer. There's no way I missed that many periods. It's not possible." I was so lucky. And she bought it. You know, she bought it, you know. But it, like I said, my dad was on campus. I remember I started the year off like writing notes in my writing, even though it was like a legitimate note, because I thought I might need to write some, you know, false notes. And so I would write these notes, and at the time you'd have to put them in a box in the attendance office. Well, one time I left the note face up, and it was in my writing, which should have been my mom's writing, and here comes my dad. And I'm thinking, oh, no, oh, no. And I just kind of would do things like this, you know. But it was a lot to keep up with having my father on campus with me in high school. I don't recommend it again. It was too much. But my high school, to be honest with you, I can't say I really was a stellar student, because it's hard to learn math when you're smoking dope. I mean, it really, and drinking, and doing these things at lunchtime. I mean, it's a bad combination. But I did graduate. And, you know, in my senior year, my dad came to me, and to be honest with you, my priorities were going to the river on Saturday, you know, and I really wasn't talking about going to college or doing anything like that. But my dad came to me, and I'm sharing this part of my story because I typically don't, but a friend of mine made an announcement outside there, so I thought I'm just going to get it out, Jeff. You know where I'm going with this. But my father came to me, and he said, "You know, Barb, there's this beauty contest." He said, you know, at that point he knew I was involved with this boyfriend, and he knew that there was something going on, but of course we didn't really talk about it, you know. But at the time, you know, my boyfriend was hitting on me. And we would go out, we would drink, and he would become abusive to me. And I would come home, I'd have bruises on my arms and things like that. But my mom and dad, they'd ask me, and I'd say, "Oh, I hit a locker." Well, you could look at the bruises, and you knew that I had not hit a locker. But again, I wasn't talking about it. And you know, when you're 17, 18 years old, and you're in an abusive relationship, and you don't know what to do, you know, and clearly, you know, I didn't know how to handle it. I couldn't talk to anybody. So I drank. I mean, I drank through it. And so my dad came to me, and I think this was his way of telling me, "There's something going on with you, but I don't know what it is." But he said, "They're having this beauty contest. Would you consider being part of it?" And I thought, okay, fine, I'll do it, you know. Whatever, you know. And all the other girls seemed like their parents had money to put them in dance and do all the cheer. Well, I wasn't doing any of that. But I said, okay, I'll do it. What have I got to lose? I needed something different. The relationship was over. But it was a challenging time for me. So I went through this, Miss Blythe. Okay, Jeff, it's out. It's out. Jeff has held this over my head for years. So not anymore, Jeff. Jeff found out about this. I don't know how he did. I didn't tell him, but I entered this contest thinking, okay, whatever, you know. And, you know, I was drinking a lot. And seeing that I had older sisters, I could go buy beer and wine in these places. And they thought it was my older sisters that was purchasing the alcohol. They didn't know I was 16 and 17 years old. I was 5'10 in high school. I got my height early. I looked older. So I'd go in this beauty contest, not thinking I'll win, not really wanting to win. I didn't even stay for what you do if you win, because I said, no, Tammy's going to win. She's got it. You know, everybody thought Tammy had it, you know. I did too, to be honest with you. So I show up and I do the deal. Well, I won it. And I was like, oh my God. I wasn't expecting to win it. I didn't really want to win it, to be honest with you. And I also, in my talent, all these girls did dance. Well, I pretended I was Lily Tomlin talking on the phone. which is ironic because I love to talk on the phone to this day. And I won the talent, too. I thought, wow, this is kind of weird, you know. So all of a sudden, my life took a whole nother turn, you know. And the lady, I had a sponsor then. She was sponsoring me. And she came to me and she said, she knew something about me that I didn't know, but she said, Barbara, you no longer can be seen in some of these establishments that you've been seen in. I thought, oh, really? And my parents were so proud of me. My dad was so proud of me. And I thought, my drinking is screwed up. I mean, it did. I couldn't buy beer anymore. I couldn't. I was sad. I mean, I was really sad. I was crying not because I won. I was crying because I couldn't drink anymore the way I used to. And I knew it. I knew it. Because, you know, when your picture's in the paper, you can't be smoking dope at the football game. You know what I mean? It's bad. And, oh, the road got narrower. So what I did then is I just got my booze and we went out to the desert and I drank alone with my boyfriend out there, you know, where no one saw me. But it was a different part of my life. I never felt like I really deserved that, but I guess I was supposed to, that was just where I was guided to go. I still don't understand it. And this is the first group I've ever really shared about it with, but it is part of my story. And today I think it did teach me some things that I use. If I had a girl, I don't know if I would, I don't have a female for a girl. It was a good experience for me. But anyhow, it definitely played into me being a little more secretive with my drinking. And so next thing you know, I meet this man, and it was, I'll never forget, it was the night when Princess Diane got married. That was our first date. And he said, you want to get some beer? And I said, sure. And he said, how about two cases? I said, there was only two of us. I said, yes, that works. You know, I mean, I thought, good, good, man. He drank like I drank. And he didn't question my drinking, and I certainly did not do his. We lived out at the river in a trailer. And we put aluminum foil on the windows. And we were happy. I mean, we were happy out there, you know. His parents paid the utility bill, so we got to crank up the air conditioning all we wanted. And honestly, we didn't leave that trailer. We would buy the stuff on Friday night after we get off work, and we would hang out in that trailer all weekend long. It had red carpet, and it was bad, you know. And it was a way of life for me. I didn't know any different, you know. But I remember I would open cupboards and I'd see bottles, you know, stashed. But my mom would always buy large quantities of things as well, because with 8 children, you always stocked up. So I thought, wow, that's interesting. He's stocking up on liquor, you know. And I'd go to do the laundry and there'd be a bottle, you know, of vodka in the laundry room. I thought, well, that's a little weird to be keeping it. But I didn't know. I didn't really know what an alcoholic was. I hadn't been around it. And the only really vision I had was the bum on the street, to be honest with you. But next thing you know, I'm finding these bottles more and more. But the drinking was still fun at that point. We had a good time. He had gotten a DUI. I never did. I don't know how. I do not. The grace of God. It's not like I didn't drive drunk, believe me, because I did. But I just never got caught. And that was it. So next thing you know, he comes to me and he says, I have a problem with drinking. I said, you do? Really? Really now? Really? And he would get up in the middle of the night and he would drink off the bottle that he kept in the freezer. I had to keep it cold, you know. I mean, really, I was 18 years old. You know, I didn't connect all these dots. And he said, yes, I've had a problem and I need some help. I said, oh, okay. Next thing you know, he's going to Hazleton Treatment Center back in Minnesota. I thought, oh, good for you. That's good. I'm glad. You know, if it's bothering you, it's not bothering me how I'm drinking. But if your drinking's bothering you, I'm go get some help. Never thinking I would have to look at my drinking. That wasn't ever entered my gut. Because I was gaining weight because of my drinking. So I got some diet pills. I went to the diet doctor in Palm Springs. It was speed is really what it was. And you know, I was wound up for 30 days when he was back in treatment. He came home from treatment and I was bone thin, but the house was clean, nice and clean. Nice and tight, 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 you know. You know, and so So we're still living in our trailer, and he comes to me and he says, you know, I can't live in Blythe anymore because, you know, of my drinking. And I said, yeah, you know. So he says, you want to move to San Diego? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah, why not? Never been to San Diego before in my life. Never, never. Never had even driven on a big freeway, you know, just a two-lane freeway. So we move here, and, you know, I'm thinking, okay, he's getting sober. Well, my drinking continued. And it's really no fun when one of you is sober and the other one is drinking. Oh, man, that, it really, you know, and he would have to come pick me up from, I remember this one holiday party, I got so drunk, and he had to come pick me up because I couldn't drive. You know, but again, I thought, well, he has the problem, I don't, you know. And he kept going to meetings, and I would go with him. I went to Al-Anon at that point, you know. And I thought, okay, you know, but not really thinking still I had a problem. Because if you were to look at me, you didn't think I had a problem either. Because on the outside, it looked okay. But on the inside, things were starting to get a little shaky. Especially because I didn't know where this was going. And all of a sudden, I'm going to meetings with him. And it's my drinking's starting to bother me a little bit. And he never really said much to me about it. But we went to a Charger game one time. My only Charger game I've been to. And I was so drunk at that game, I was literally like passed out by 10:30 in the morning, you know. And this was the first time I had met his family. Yeah. And I remember his mother saying, well, maybe you shouldn't drink this much this early in the morning. And I said, I know, I would never do that. And I'm thinking, I always do this, you know. So things were starting to change with my drinking at that point. And, you know, I'd love to tell you that I came in, you know, to this program just, yes, I need to be here. But honestly, I didn't. I came in here thinking, I don't think I'm one of you. I don't. And he ended, my boyfriend at that time ended up having to go to treatment two more times to Hazleton because for some reason he could not get sober. And my drinking was progressing and we had broken up and I was living in North Park by myself. And like I said, things were starting to kind of fall apart. I was working, but I never knew if I was going to be able to do my work effectively because I was hungover, you know, and it was starting to show. And then I was starting to make mistakes at my job, you know. I'm also a member of another 12-step program. I go to OA. I know this is not an OA meeting, but at the same time, that disease was also taking a hold on me. So I was drinking and binging at the same time, and I'm telling you, I was one miserable person. I was 21 years old, and I thought, I really thought I'm about ready to kill myself because I couldn't get anything together long enough. I was trying to get sober, but I couldn't. I decided to give you all a try, but I couldn't put any time together. I could not. And I didn't have anywhere else to go. My family didn't know what to do with me because I was different. You know, none of my sisters at that point were drinking like I was. It's like, you know, I wasn't involved in a church. AA was the last stop on the block for me. And I was going to meetings in Pacific Beach at this point, and I wanted what you had, but I couldn't put it down for a long period of time. And back then, they had treatment centers. You know, and your insurance paid for it, you know, back then. You know, I don't think they do that as much anymore, but there was a treatment center out in El Cajon. It's called Raider Institute, and they treated alcoholism and eating disorders at that place, and that's where I went. I called my mom, and I said, I'm going to check myself into a hospital. Now, my mother thinks that all of us are perfect children, you know, so when your daughter calls and says, I'm going to a treatment center, she's like, what for, you know? And I said, well, Mom, because I'm drinking too much. And I'll never forget it. She said, I've never seen you drink. Oh, yeah. I could rob a bank today, and my mother would say, they shouldn't have the money. They shouldn't have had the money there. They tempted her. It would be someone else's fault but mine, believe me. No, it's true. So I finally said, Mom, I hate myself. And she said, maybe you need some help then. She got it that I hated myself. She could not get it that I had a problem with alcohol. She couldn't relate to that. So I was 22 years old, and I checked myself into a treatment center. It was on Greenfield Drive. I remember driving up there thinking, I don't know. I thought I was going to go there and relax, to be honest with you. You know, kind of get my head clear, you know. It wasn't that at all. It wasn't. They introduced me to meetings. We got the 12 and 12. We got the AA book, and the journey began at that point. And I was there for 30 days, and I didn't want to leave, to be honest with you. I really didn't. I didn't, because I didn't have a large tool set to deal with life. I didn't know. Because when you start drinking at 13 and 14, that's when you're growing up. That's when you're maturing. That's where your parents are helping you develop some life skills. I missed all of that. So here I am at 22, all of a sudden needing to function in life without my fixes. And I was scared. I was scared to death. I didn't have the relationship. The relationship was over at that point, and I was pretty much by myself. Lived in North Park. I had a two-bedroom little studio apartment or duplex, and all I had was AA at that point. I got myself a sponsor. Her name was Jo, and she lived out in San Carlos. She was married, and next thing you know, I start getting involved in the meetings. I was working at Pacific Beach in Tony Roma's restaurant in the corporate office, and I was scared to death to work, you know. I met Jeff at a 7 a.m. meeting down there. I would go Monday through Friday, and I would talk about, I don't know if I can do payroll today or not. You know, I was scared to death, you know, because you take away the booze, and guess what? Feelings are going to come up, and they were uncomfortable. Sometimes they're great feelings, but for me at first, I think I cried my first year. I cried. I could not quit crying. and so I got into this program. And if you're new, if you can get anything, if you can get with a group of people that are doing life, doing the meetings, enjoying the fellowship, I'm telling you, it's a recipe for success. And that's what I did. I grabbed on. Next thing you know, we're having potlucks. We're going to the dances. You know, I thought I would be bored in these rooms. I've been everything but bored. If you're involved in this program, you've got life going on. And that's what I did. And my sponsor, oh, man, you know, I really had a hard time. And she would tell me, read page 449 in the big book. You know, read it. Read it and call me back, Barb. Read it and call me back. And I think it was just... I don't remember if I had a pink cloud, because some people come in here and they're really happy. I don't remember that, to be honest with you. It wasn't my experience. But what was my experience was I didn't have to go anything through any of this alone. That's what I got. I got that I could call people, and I could just go sit on their couch, and they would listen to me. You know, they would take the time out that I needed. And, you know, I was things were going along pretty good, and... one day I got a call. I was in Pacific Beach at the farmer's market on Saturday morning, because that's what I did, and I got a phone call from my previous boyfriend's father, and he had said Mark died. And Mark was 30 years old. He was the one that went to Hazleton 3 times, and you know, he could not get this program. And here I think I was sober maybe 4 or 5 years at this point. And, you know, at that point, I got it that this is a disease that will kill. And, you know, his family had a lot of money, and they were paying for those treatment centers out of their own pocket. And I got it that money can't buy sobriety. You can have all the money in the world, but you can't buy this gig. It's not for sale. And I don't know why some of us get it and some of us don't. I wish I did. I wish I could answer that question. And I remember going to his funeral, and it was really probably one of the hardest times in my sobriety, because I couldn't explain it. I couldn't fix it. And he was really the first person that I had been close to that had passed away. And that was, you know, very difficult. But again, I was sober, and I kept going to meetings. I was at that point highly involved in the program. And my sponsor told me at that time, she said, you need to get involved in a step study. And I thought, okay, I'll go, you know. So, and to be honest, I wasn't dating at that point. I wanted to, but no one was asking me out. I said, oh, well, I took the year. You know, they say if you're new, take a year off from dating. And I think that is some good advice so you can get a solid foundation going. So my year was going into 2 years, you know, not I didn't want that, though. I was ready to date, and no one was asking me out. And at that point, women waited for men to ask them out. They didn't ask men out, you know. So I kept going to the step study, and it was all men except myself and another lady. I mean, it was, you know. So, but I would go, never thinking, because I was told, You don't come to AA looking for the best dry cleaner. You don't come here to find out the best nail salon. You don't come here to find out where to get your hair cut. You come here to stay sober and to get sober, and that's why you're here. You're not here looking for a husband or anything. And my sponsor would tell me that, and I'm like, okay, fine. So I really wasn't looking for, you know, for a husband. Well, no, I was. Well, kind of. You know what I mean? Kind of. I didn't want to be alone. Let's say that. You know what I mean? I didn't. I thought, gosh, I don't want to. I mean, but I got to the point where I finally surrendered, and I said, God, if it's meant to be that I'm alone, I'm going to be alone. And I got to a point in my life where I was okay with being alone. It was really gross for me because I didn't have a man to fix it. It was me. I would go to Balboa Park on Saturday. I'd ride my bike. I'd hang out by myself. I love Balboa Park. And I had a nice life for myself, to be honest. I was sober. I was doing a lot. I was active in AA. Busy, busy, busy. And I thought, okay, good. Well, then I started dating. You know, and that's, you know, I did get asked out, and that's an interesting process in AA. If you're new, hang on, you know. But I did start dating, and I, you know, I'm happy to tell you I did meet someone in AA. He's sitting here today with me. Joe and I will celebrate 20 years of marriage in January. Yeah. A day at a time. It's true. It's true. And you know that I will tell you, if I was not sober, I would not be married today. If I did not have the support of my women friends, and you know, and if I wasn't working a program, I don't think I could stay married. You know, honestly, an alcoholic, you know what we do? We run. It's hard to stay put. Hard to stay put, and we both have stayed put. You know, and some days it goes along great, and some days it doesn't. You know, I'm not gonna pretend. You know, if you're an alcoholic like I am, you know, I've got to constantly keep eyes on self. You know, but women in these rooms have told me how to do this. They've taught me how to stay married. I haven't done it on my own. Because believe me, my solution to some problems are very interesting sometimes. My friends know. You know, so for that, I am grateful. We do have 2 children. We have 2 boys. My oldest will be 16 in December. Oh, God love him. Joey. And then I have a 13-year-old, Andy. And, you know, it's really interesting raising a teenager sober. And it's really interesting because I started drinking. When you start drinking at 13 and 14, and all of a sudden I have a kid in my household, and I'm thinking, how are we going to do things differently? He knows his parents are alcoholics. His chances of becoming an alcoholic are pretty high. Statistically, they are. So we're pretty open in our household about alcoholism. We go to family functions, and they get to see it because the disease is alive and well in our families. I have one nephew, I can't believe this, but he has a piece of bark in his head because he was drunk and he ran into a tree, and the bark is still there, and it's been there for like 8 months. But he thinks he's cool, and I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah. Yeah, he thinks it's cool. Like, Aunt Barb, look at the bark. And it literally is a piece of bark. And, you know, I mean, it's insane. It is insane, you know. So when we get together with the family, I'm like, did you see this? Did you see this? Because I want my children to know what alcoholism can do. And I don't know how it will end up with my 2 kids. I don't. What I've done with my oldest one is I went to him, because it's easy to say just don't drink, I said, you've got, you know, there's high chances of, you know, alcoholism, you know, carrying on. And I said, what would it take for you not to drink in your first year as a freshman in high school? He said, oh God. He said, he loves shoes. He said, I want 5 pairs of Air Jordan shoes. And I said, God, you know. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, cheaper than treatment. It is. It's totally cheaper than treatment. So we went and we bought him 5. So his freshman year, I went, I said, are you clean? Have you been clean? He said, yeah, Mom, I have. I said, okay. We went and bought those 5 pairs of shoes. Do I have it in my budget? No, but it's like, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. So I said to him, okay, what's it going to take for your sophomore year? You know, I said, oh, God. So I might be going to New York to see Green Day. Yep. Yeah, so check with me. But, you know, he hasn't picked up. So how much of a price tag do I put on that? You know, but at the same time, I am a sober mother, and I am going through puberty with these boys. Now, I was raised with 5 sisters. Oh, this is a trip. You know what I mean? It's hard. You know, I have to work on not reacting, you know. But I, for the most part, I do pretty well. You know, I do pretty well with him. And, you know, I got to go to the Green Day concert with him not too long ago at the Cricket. You know, that was an interesting thing. You know, but there again, he was with me. He didn't pick up. I thought if I was 15, I would have ditched my mother and I would have been smoking pot in the back. No problem. He didn't. So I'm grateful for that. You know, I think I'm getting close. Am I? No? Okay. So that's, you know, I have a beautiful husband. We have a marriage that we're both, you know, doing a day at a time. And like I said, 20 years of marriage, and we have these 2 kids. These are all gifts of sobriety, though. Because I tell you, if I don't stay close to this program, I know I could go back out, and guess what? It could all be gone. And I don't think it would take very long for it all to be gone. I work at a law firm, against all odds. You know, they have no idea that I'm in the program. I don't need to share it. At times I have to go buy liquor for events. It's hard. That's a hard part of my job. But I pick up my cell phone and I'm talking with a friend of mine in AA while I'm doing it. Because I'm still, my mouth will water when I see the bottles, and oh, it's probably the hardest part of my job. But I have to do that, and I do it. It doesn't happen often. But the other thing is that is so amazing to me is how this program just continues to work in my life. You know, I have a sponsor, and she's here tonight. And if you don't have a sponsor, I suggest you get one. And a sponsor you can do business with. A sponsor that you can call and cry, and you can just share it. Because, and you know, we'll also say, let's get working on the steps too. You know, because no matter how long I've been sober, I still need to keep my face in the steps, because that's where the promises are. The promises of the program do come true. And I'm grateful for her. I'm definitely grateful for her and her husband as well too for coming tonight. I shared a lot about my high school days, and to be honest, I never went to college. I didn't, because I was drinking and I started working. And, you know, it's always been a little embarrassing at a law firm, you know, people that are highly educated, but yet I never lied on my resume. I told them I don't have it, and I like my job, and I have a good job today. And so what I've recently done, and it's very interesting for me, is I've enrolled in college. And I know, pretty scary. And I tried to do Grossmont before, but the parking was too hard for me. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't do Grossmont College. You know, so I really just have prayed about it. And you know, and God is definitely a part of my life. And I shared earlier, whenever I went to treatment, I went off a Greenfield Drive, and I went to the right. No, the left, excuse me. The left, I do know. Went to the left. That's where my treatment center was. So now, almost 25 years later, I'm going to college, and I go off Greenfield, and I go to the right for my college class. So God willing, this next Tuesday, I will have finished my first college class. You know, yeah, I know, it's kind of cool. You know, and Yeah, and yeah, Molly, thank you. Molly was instrumental. And, you know, I don't know where this is going to go, but all I know is that when I go to class, we pray before for class. And I thought, I need God in this equation, just like I needed God to stay sober. I need God to do this college stuff. We had to write a paper about someone instrumental in my life, and I wrote about my first sponsor. You know, she was very instrumental in my life. My final is a paper on excessive drinking. Know a lot about that, you know. And one of my classmates, I had to do an outline, and he read it, and he's like, "Do you drink?" And I'm like, "How'd you know?" Or "I don't." He said, "You don't drink." I said, "How did you know that by reading my outline?" Well, he could tell. I knew a lot about it, you know. So, you know, that's a gift of this program. I don't know where this college thing is going to go, but I have God in it. I'm talking about it. I'm willing to show up and do the next indicated steps. And that's what this program has given me. And I'm not alone. I'm not going through this alone. My friend Ann sent me a card saying good luck on your journey. I mean, she didn't have to do that, but she wanted to be there for me. I mean, how priceless is that? You know, so, I don't know. I don't think I forgot anything. I appreciate John asking me to lead. I was like, oh, God, at first, you know. But, you know, I cannot thank the program enough for everything that it has done for me. I can never repay you. I can never repay this program. I would like to, and I try to. I do sponsor people, but it's kind of hard because I do work, you know. If you need to talk between 7:15 and 8 o'clock in the morning or 6:15 and 7 at night, I'm always in the car and love to talk on the phone. But I have 3,000 minutes. but, you know, I know the day will come when I'm not raising two teenage boys and doing this, that I will give back to this program. You know, and God willing, November 17th, I will celebrate 25 years of sobriety. I know, that's pretty darn cool. Because I didn't think I'd stay this long. Honestly, I didn't. If I thought I'd stay this long, I'd say you're crazy. You know, but I go to two meetings a week. I get to the minimum of two. Because that I would love to go to three, but I've had to cut back because college, you know, I've had to balance things. So the sponsor and I talked about it, and so I'm only going to two, but that's okay for now. You know, it's not forever. But I'm still getting together with my sponsor every other week to work on a step, you know, and so that counts for something, I think, you know. So again, this is my story. I just am welcome the newcomer. I'm glad you're here. And I thank everyone for allowing me this opportunity to share.